This is Eco Radio KC, a locally produced exploration of positive solutions to the ecological challenges we face as we work to create a healthier future for our community and the planet.
Thanks for listening to 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. On today's show, our guests are eight young people who have been learning and teaching others about water quality in the Kansas City area through the Kids About Water program. Find out how you can help the next generation maintain our waterways for drinking and recreation. Hosts Richard Mabian and Dave Bennett Freeling will also be joined by Laura Caldwell, Education Director of the Friends of the Kaw and former Kansas Riverkeeper, who will update you on how you can get out and enjoy our local waterways. But first, the environmental news for the week of 3/4/19 on Eco Radio KC. My name is Teresa Wilkie. Democracy Now! Report, the Republican-controlled Senate voted to confirm former coal industry lobbyist Andrew Wheeler as administrator of the Environmental Protection Agency. Thursday's 52-47 vote was mostly along party lines, with only one Republican, Susan Collins of Maine, not voting for Wheeler. A report from TechCrunch, climate change is affecting weather systems and ecosystems around the world, but exactly how is still a topic of intense study. New simulations made possible by higher-powered computers suggest that cloud cover over oceans may die off altogether once a certain level of CO2 has been reached, accelerating warming and contributing to a vicious cycle. A paper published in Nature details the new, far more detailed simulation of cloud formation and the effects of solar radiation on those clouds. USA Today reports warming oceans from human-caused climate change has shrunk the populations of many species of fish around the world. Fisheries around the world have already responded. CNN reports the term global warming used to be more in vogue, but now climate change has become more common. Check Google Trends, though, and the term seemed to be typed into a browser at about the same rate. So which is it? Experts will tell you it's not an either-or answer. Climate change alters the weather system in ways that aren't limited to temperatures. If people want to be specific, ocean heating may be a more accurate term, because 98% of the extra energy generated by human activity goes into the sea, causing serious problems such as colder winters and more intense storms. It heats the oceans, leads to flooding, it kills animals, plants, humans, and much more. No matter what terms people use to describe it, it's important to keep talking about what may be one of the biggest threats to this planet. In December 18, Environmental Protection Agency and Department of Army signed a proposed rule to provide a clear, understandable, and implementable definition of waters of the United States. With very short notice, the public was invited to Kansas City, Kansas, to provide comments on the proposed definition. Before the hearings began, Sierra Club and Clean Water for All sponsored a press conference to call on the Environmental Protection Agency and the Department of Army to protect clean water and abandon its proposed revised water rule, the latest in the efforts to roll back critical protections and make it easier for industry to endanger our kids and communities without any accountability. The informative rally was moderated by Ron Klataski, Executive Director of Audubon of Kansas. The following are excerpts from speakers at that rally.
The agencies under this rule are basically ignoring the concepts of watersheds that we have all educated ourselves about in our careers, and is a major focus of how we manage our land and our waters. And basically they are throwing out the concept that what happens upstream doesn't matter downstream. And as we all know, in the conservation community, that is certainly not true, because what you do upstream, whether it's fill and dredge and pollute, goes downstream, even in streams that are no longer perennial. And one of the tactics being used in this administrative pushed rule is to eliminate perennial and probably intermittent streams which are not major rivers and are not flowing all the time. And here in the Great Plains, particularly the western half of the Great Plains and many parts of the Intermountain West, a lot of streams that once were perennial are no longer flowing all the time because of dams and diversions and excessive appropriation of groundwater and surface water for irrigation. So a lot of the streams that they propose to eliminate protection of are dewatered because of man-made impacts on those. And we need to restore our streams, and we need to protect our streams and our wetlands. Wetlands are critically important for the bird life, migratory waterfowl, shorebirds, wading birds like whooping cranes and sandhill cranes, egrets and herons, and other water birds. And if we lose that, if we lose protection for our wetlands, we're going to be very much poorer as a nation in terms of our wild, protecting our wildlife heritage. Our next speaker this afternoon is Tim Fate, and he comes over and brings another area of expertise that is being overlooked. He's from Columbia, Missouri.
Good afternoon. I'm Dr. Tim Fate. I'm a pediatrician, a father of five, and a grandfather of 14. And I'm here to represent the children of our great nation. The last thing we need to do for the health and future of our kids is to make it harder to protect our water sources for them. And that's exactly what the Dirty Water Rule would do. It would strip protections from the streams and wetlands that we rely on to feed our drinking water system. These water bodies are vital to the health of our kids and our families. If the last few years have taught us anything, we should know that we can't take access to clean water for granted. Talk to the people in Flint, Michigan, Toledo, Ohio, Charleston, South Carolina. They've all had significant clean drinking water crises. Some of those are still happening today and continue to impact the families and kids that we want to offer a clean environment to when we leave it. Water pollution impacts all of us, but particularly children and infants. They're at greatest risk because they tend to consume more water per pound of body weight than adults do. So they get relatively higher concentrations of any pollutants that are in that water. And in addition to that, children tend to, when they swim, swallow much more water than adults do when they're swimming. So that when they're in streams and rivers and lakes and bays, they pick up more of the pollutants from the water. Kids are also more vulnerable from the contaminated water because they have developing organ systems and tissues, particularly the brain, is going through massive development through childhood years. And their systems aren't developed to metabolize or break down the pollutants as well as they are in adults, so that it's much tougher on those children's organs than it is on an adult. We know that what happens upstream can negatively impact downstream drinking water resources. And so the best line of defense to protect our nation's water quality and the health of our kids is to prevent harmful contaminants, toxins, and other pollutants from entering our groundwater, rivers, lakes, streams, and bays in the first place. That should be a primary consideration when developing regulations and other programs involving upstream activities that could negatively impact the downstream drinking water sources that our kids are drinking from.
I'm wondering if you would like to make any closing comments, Michael.
I just want to thank you all for coming here today to speak to this really important issue for this region and for this country. We heard a lot of different perspectives today, and it's very clear that the Dirty Water Rule is the last thing that we need in this country. We should be doing more to protect our water, not less, which is exactly what the Dirty Water Rule would do. So again, thank you all, and we'd love to open it up for questions if there are any in the room.
Specifically, what language in there is the most detrimental?
John Devine, can I put you on the spot? We're going to bring up a coalition expert who can talk much more deeply to that.
Tell me your name and your title.
You bet. I'm John Devine. I'm the director of federal water policy for the Natural Resources Defense Council. This proposal would eliminate protections for streams that flow only in response to rain, and invite industry to ask for even greater rollbacks for streams that don't flow year-round. Those together constitute roughly 60% of the streams in the country. It would also eliminate protections for at least half of the wetlands in the country. And as you heard from all these panelists, they provide multiple functions in terms of water filtration, habitat for critters, and flood control.
Question. So does that mean corporations or businesses can just pollute as much as they want in these little streams, as much as they want?
It will open them up to a variety of pollution. The thing that we're talking about here, it defines the coverage of a bunch of different programs in the Clean Water Act. So if these streams and wetlands aren't protected, they can be filled in without federal protection. They can be polluted by any number of industries and facilities that store a bunch of oil nearby don't have to prepare spill plans and things like that. So it's a kind of a comprehensive attack on the Clean Water Act and on our clean water.
How much do state regulations fill in where the federal regulations fall?
That's a great question, and it's something that the agencies are trying to, they're doing a lot of hand-waving about to say that this won't be as big a deal as it could be. Many states, unfortunately, have limitations on whether they can protect more than the federal government, and some have an absolute prohibition on doing so. In addition to that, there's just the political difficulty of getting additional protections in through a state legislature or administrative agency. And it's not cheap to run a pollution control program, and a lot of states are already cash-strapped and need to do, and if the federal government leaves the scene, it's basically imposing that cost either on the state, or if the state isn't able to step up, on people who will suffer the consequences.
John, if I may, there's actually a really interesting study that was done in 2013 by the Environmental Law Institute that looks at that question of whether or not state laws can sort of fill in the gap. What they find is that 36 states lack sufficient measures to protect that sort of stopgap. So two-thirds of states lack protections all in all. And, if you think about watersheds generally, if you're a state with really good laws on the books and your neighbors aren't, mm-hmm. like, what's the point of protecting your water if your states aren't?
Kyle, can you say your name?
Yes, my name is Kyle Hart, and I work with a group called the Virginia Conservation Network.
Not sure who to vote for in the Kansas City mayoral primary? Perhaps KKFI could help clear things up. Tune in to our live mayoral forum, Saturday, 3 to 5 p.m.
KKFI is the Kansas City area's independent, non-commercial community radio station. We seek to stimulate, educate, and entertain our audience to reflect the diversity of the local and world community, and to provide a channel for individuals and groups, issues and music that have been overlooked, suppressed, or underrepresented by other media. Interested in volunteering? Contact 816-994-7864 or go online at kkfi.org and click the volunteer tab. Thank you for listening to 90.1 FM KKFI Kansas City Community Radio.
All right, this is Richard Mabian, and good evening, everyone. I had a chance to attend that hearing that those comments you just heard came from, and it was really a fantastic experience. I was real proud of Kansas City, Kansas, for hosting it, and the Sierra Club, National Sierra Club, was able to provide a ballroom for people to hang in, and they even had food in there, man. It was pretty neat. plenty of drinks, the whole bit, coffee and tea and stuff like that for you people who thought I was talking about something else. And it was really, I think, a step up for us as a metropolitan region. And we had people in here from all over the country, man. They came in from D.C. and various places, and it was really cool. Florida was just loaded with people from Florida because of those wetland circumstances they got down there. And I think it was a good step. You know how we talk about one step for man, a large step for mankind? Well, that's why I figured that event was. And from what I hear, you're going to be able to hear some more recordings that we made. And one of them's even going to have yours truly on there. So I hope you all hear it. I think it was a pretty good one. But, of course, tonight's a different story. As you know, we have our water testing program that's going on with the Friends of the Call and various young folks out of Wyandotte and Harmon High School. And so we have another group here with us tonight because we always feel it's good for them to be able to have an experience of talking about their experience on the radio, not only to share with you what they've had a chance to experience, but also for them to see what it is to be able to talk and tell their story. So I've split them into two groups. We got four groups here that we're going to deal with two in each group. And so the first group we have sitting at the table, I'm going to first go around and have them introduce themselves. So we'll start with the young man sitting in front of me. Will you tell me your name and what school you attended?
Yeah, man. My name's Carlos Castro, and I'm from Wyandotte High School. Y un saludo para mi familia, que creo que está escuchando. And, yeah.
Yeah, I think that was a shout-out for you.
Go Bulldogs.
That.
Woof!
Okay.
My name is Jennifer Paez, and I go to J.C. Harmon High School.
Okay. Yes, ma'am. You next in line.
I'm Deborah Hodge, and I go to J.C. Harmon High School.
My name is Issa Muhammad Iman, and I go to Wyandotte High School.
All right. If you notice, we got them split up with different high schools. Now, we got some questions here this time around, and so I'm going to start starting with you this time. Tell our listeners one awesome thing about you, something that you consider your proudest achievement.
Something I consider my proudest achievement is... I'm a really good soccer player.
Ooh, okay.
Something I'm really proud of is my race. I am proud to be over here in America. I am Hmong, and it's a great offering to be in America.
Oh, wow, that's heavy. Go ahead.
My greatest achievement is actually winning President's Cup last year, and we're actually going to regionals, and then if we win, we're going to nationals.
President's Cup with what?
Soccer.
Oh, another soccer player. Go ahead.
All right, man. My greatest achievement is running varsity cross country as a freshman. I ran regionals as a freshman.
So why? What'd you run?
Cross country.
Cross country. Sorry, yeah. I missed that. So excuse me. Very good. Okay. Now we're going to get down to the business. Each of you were assigned to a particular testing station. Normally when we come on the air, listeners, it's before they go out and actually perform their testing stations with a designated group that we've chosen here in town. On this particular group, they went to their testing stations before they came on the air. So I'm glad because now they can give you a summary of what they experienced. So we'll start this time back across the table with Carlos. Tell us, first of all, you two have to work on this together. What was your test?
Yeah, so me and Jennifer tested water for macroinvertebrates, and what macroinvertebrates means is basically the little critters that live in the water.
Okay. So what? Tell us about your experience at the testing.
So we went to the wetlands outside of J.C. Harmon where we met up after school, and we would collect the macros out there, then run a series of tests to see the pollution of our water.
Okay. What was your test?
My test was on bacteria, of how much waste there was, and that waste has so much bacteria that come into the water. And this helped us to see if the water was safe or not, and how if it could be harmful to our body or human, others, and animal nature. This can kind of help us to see how many colonies there is in bacteria to see if, like, how many, if the bacteria increases or decreases.
Okay.
The test I did was dissolved oxygen. This was to help us figure out if the water was healthy for the fish and the aquatic life.
Now, all of you have mentioned what I consider to be scientific stuff, okay? Had any of you been involved with any of that before you start dealing with this group?
No, I did not. Friends of the Call was my first experience with this type of stuff.
Okay.
I actually participated in something similar back in about fourth and fifth grade at Douglas Elementary School.
Okay, Douglas Elementary.
Yeah, Douglas Elementary.
Over off of Washington?
Yeah, by Sumner.
By Sumner. Well, I'll be. I have to come back and talk to you. Go ahead.
Start Academy.
Yes.
Thank you for it. This year we went to see a water treatment. How water has been come to from waste to clean water.
Okay.
No, this is my first experience.
First experience. When you were at Douglas, did you go down to JFK for the classes?
Yeah, I was in that building right by Bookerman Lake.
You don't remember me being there?
I think you were, but
we even brought the mayor in when you was there, right?
Yeah, and we made birdhouses and everything.
Yes, I'll be. Boy, I guess we even get around or something. That's fantastic, man, to see you back in here again. That's great. Okay, what I want to go now with you two is explain to us how you're able to get the micro deals out of the water.
All right, so to get them out, there's two ways. I'll be explaining the first way, and Jennifer will explain the second one. So it's called the D-net. It's called the D-net because the net's shaped like a D.
Okay.
Like the letter D. All right, don't get... All right. So then, we throw the net in the water, and we make sure the net touches the bottom of the water source. And then you got to, like, shake it so it can move the life there. And then you flip it over and you bring it back up and you'll see the little critters there. And if you don't see them, well, you can like put them in a bin with water and then you'll see them shake in there, and then you can just study them. And yeah.
Okay.
The other type of net is the kick net, which you need at least three people for to do it correctly. So then you have your net running where the river's going through the net and not the other way around, so that the macroinvertebrates get caught in your net. So then you want to put rocks along the bottom. If you see one in person, you see that there's a white strip at the bottom, and you put rocks along the bottom and then have someone kick in front so you can get the macroinvertebrates to move, because they usually like to be under rocks. And then once you're done, you just take the nets off of the bottom of, take the rocks off the bottom of the net and pick up your net from the bottom, and you just put it on the table and spray it with water and collect your macros.
Okay. What kind of macros did you collect?
So there was three types of macros. We had the sensitive to pollution, somewhat sensitive to pollution, and the very tolerant to pollution.
Okay, I'm going to go a little bit further with you because, see, I'm a novice, so I can do that. Do you have leeches in the water?
Yeah, there was actually, we actually caught a leech before we went to the training, and that's in the somewhat sensitive to, and the very tolerant to pollution.
Yes, and back when we were going through doing the testing and stuff, you were learning it. Didn't you even have little crawdads and stuff that we was able to get out of the water?
Yeah, we had crawdads. We had Mayflower nymph. We had a damselfly nymph also.
We had some crawfish too.
Oh, that's fantastic. I just wanted people to hear how much you have learned in this class. That will be with you in your life, okay, you two? Because you had a very, what I think was a detailed process that you had to go through. So explain to folks what you had to do.
Well, the bacteria that I did was mostly there was like a pipette you had to squeeze in water, and you had to put it for like a platform where it's called eating, and you put that pipette of the water, the wetland from Jason Harmon, you had to put that in the pipette, and you put it on the platform, and like you have to wait for 2 days to see, start seeing bacteria growing from the water. And most of the time, there's like about like 10 or 11 dots in the colonies and per square. So that kind of helped us to see like if if it's like kind of more than 10 or like it's less than 10, that kind of helps us to see if the water's poor or the best is like not having a lot of bacteria. But then it's pretty fair and pretty good because like there's about like good amount of dots or like bacteria.
Okay.
For the dissolved oxygen, there were like various of chemicals you had to put into the water. So you'd have to put two chemicals in there, and you want to shake it up for about a minute, and that would change the color to water, and it'll help you see if there's any dissolved oxygen. And then you want to put the third chemical, shake it up for another minute, and then you'd have to get this chemical called sodium phosphate, and you want to put that in the water. So you could see if the water is clear or not, and you want to do that until the water gets clear, and those drops will help you determine saturation and if the water is healthy.
Boy, I tell you, they just make me proud. All of you out there know me and my environmental concerns and issues and involvement, and there's always a cloud hanging over the inner city as far as what they are actually receiving, what our young people, our future generations are involved in. And I think it's great to sit here with these young people talking the way they are and to know that they have that kind of knowledge that they possess. There's nothing but upward and onward for them. I'm going to ask them a question here before we bring up our next group. Why should other young people in your generation get involved in working to help the environment? You two answer that one.
Yeah, well, there's other generations coming up. Got to take care of the planet for them.
I feel like it's very important for people to know how the Earth is doing right now because it's something that we can start fixing, starting with these upcoming generations, which are going to live in it in the future. So I think it's very important for them to become involved.
Okay.
Yeah, and there's also a lot of beautiful species out there. Save the giraffes.
Save the giraffes, as you said. Okay, for you two, what would you tell adults who may not be motivated to make changes to defend the environment?
To think about the future and think about the planet and the human species.
We need to like kind of limit stuff, like pollution that's causing our world to kind of like have global warming. That can harm the water, plants, and our society too. And that can cause a big impact, which is not going to be really good. So I would like want to older adults to kind of limit things of what they use.
Okay, yes, ma'am.
I actually have something to add. I think that if someone doesn't want to do it, the best thing that they can do is think about someone they care about, whether they have kids or whether they have parents, if they want them, like per se, if they were young again, to live in the environment or the future environment that scientists say that we might have in the future.
All right. Gang, we're going to take a break so we can switch groups around. We'll be back to you in just a second.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lazowitz, and this is Climate Connections. For generations, the Karuk tribe set small fires in northwestern forests. This cleared excess brush and promoted culturally important species like hazel.
Those hazel sticks only produce long, straight, flexible, strong shoots after they're burned. Two springs later, those long, straight, skinny sticks are pruned, peeled, and woven into a basket.
Frank Lake is a Karuk descendant and a research ecologist for the U.S. Forest Service. He says about a century ago, the Forest Service began requiring strict fire suppression and forced tribes to stop using small fires to manage the forest. But with no fire on the landscape, brush grew thick and dry sticks and leaves accumulated. Add a warmer climate and conditions are ripe for dangerous wildfires. So the Forest Service is seeing wisdom in the old ways and increasingly conducts controlled burns. The latest federal strategy for wildland fire management stresses the need to work with tribes.
To then incorporate traditional knowledge, cultural values, or tribal values and interests into the landscape restoration strategies.
The approach will help prevent wildfires and promote species that the tribes use for food, medicine, and making baskets. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. Learn more at yaleclimateconnections.org.
President Trump has renewed his vows to conservative Christians to clamp down on abortion.
There are a lot of people who are either never Trumpers or somewhat skeptical of his character flaws who might be willing to vote differently if that issue were taken off the table.
That's next time on Interfaith Voices.
Tuesday at noon after Lynx Mix.
Looking to get rid of that old clunker of a car, boat, truck, or motorcycle and help the community at the same time? Donate to KKFI 90.1 Kansas City Community Radio for a tax deduction. Call Bill at 816-931-3122 for more information.
All right, I'm back with you. This is Richard Mabian, and I'm with our illustrious water testing young people from Harmon and Wyandotte High School. This is our second group, so I'm going to start this group like I did the last group, going around having them introduce yourself to you. First of all, I want your name and what school you attended.
My name is Savion. I attend Wyandotte High School.
My name is Bernard. I'm a freshman at J.C. Harmon.
Excuse me. Do y'all not have last names over at y'all school?
My name is Savion Powell.
Oh, okay.
My name is Bernard, too. I'm from J.C. Harmon. I want to give a quick shout-out to Pernita and Casey Mikes.
All right.
My name is Ure, and I go to Wyandotte High School.
My name is Stephanie Mackey, and I go to J.C. Harmon. I want to do a shout-out to my family and friends.
Oh, very good. Well, we're going to come back to you next with a question. Tell our listeners one awesome thing about yourself, some proudest accomplishment.
A proud accomplishment I think of myself is all of my paintings that I've done.
Paintings?
Yeah.
Ooh.
I am very proud of myself for making soccer varsity as a freshman.
Wow, God, we got some soccer people going.
I'm very proud of myself for making on the straight A honor roll student.
Ooh, yeah, go ahead, brother.
I'm also proud of myself for making straight A honor roll.
Yeah. Man, we feel out of place sitting there, man. Okay, so here we go. You saw what happened before. We're going to start with you two. We want you to tell people about your test.
All right. My test was nitrogen. For my test, we measured the parts per million, and we measured the water in J.C. Harmon, and we tested for nitrates in the water, and what nitrates are like the feces and fertilizer in the water, and so we tested for the pollution in the water.
Okay.
So my test was on phosphate, and phosphate are like the bubbles that we see in our pond, lakes, river, and creeks. And the reason why we want to do the test is because phosphate comes from dish soap and fertilizer, and if you drink it, you get sick, or worst case.
All right.
So my test is pH and conductivity. It helps us to see what is in our water and what is healthy for the species that lives in the water.
My testing is turbidity and water and air temperature. And turbidity is how clear the water is. And then water and air is like water is to see the dissolved oxygen. And air is just to see if there was anything unusual between the water and air temperature.
Okay. Now, it's going to be a little difficult for you, but I want you to explain at least one of the tests that you had to give. How did you do it? Yes.
I did the water temperature by getting a special thermometer, and I put it in the J.C. Harmon water and held it there for 2 minutes, And after the 2 minutes, I didn't take the thermometer out, but I looked at it and then put down my score that I got.
Okay.
For mine, I will get a little, like a cup, and then I will fill it in just a line to where it says to stop, and I will fill it up to where the line is, and I will put it into a special thermometer, and I will hold it for 1 minute. It's the same process for both conductivity and pH.
Okay.
All right, so for mine, I'll use 2 test tubes, and then after that, I will fill up with, I'll fill up 1 test tube with a chemical for phosphate to indicate how much parts per million we have, and then I put it in the wheel, and then I spin the wheel to match up the same color to be clear, and it's going to tell us how much parts per million of phosphate we have.
So I tested for nitrates, and so you get 2 tubes, you fill it up with water, you get the what's it called, the chemical, and put it in the water, and there's a disc. It goes from clear to dark blue. You match it up, and both test tubes should have the same color with the disc. And however, whatever the number is, parts per million, that's what it indicates on the chart.
It's amazing. I just sitting here listening to y'all. You just don't know how much how impressive it is this day and age, and I'm sure others out there in the audience who are listening. We'd have to feel the same way. We hear so many things about our future generations, and so it's good to know that, you know, KCK, we got some future scientists, some future budding individuals on the way, and I think that's something that we should all be proud of and cherish. Every time I watch them doing your test, the test you're doing, they use a blank white piece of paper. What's that about?
So with the blank white piece of paper, because we're inside the building, we can't like get a clear sight with the disc. So we put the white paper to clarify whatever we see on the test tubes in the disc.
Okay. All right, y'all, tell me about this one, is it turbidity? Yeah, tell me about that test.
The turbidity is just seeing how clear the water is.
Okay, so what do?
You get a turbidity tube and you fill it up, but each time you fill up, you look inside, and if there was a hole in it, and like you fill it all the way up, and after you dump it a little from the hole, if you can't see it after you look in it, and you keep dumping it until you can see it.
What are you seeing?
A disc at the bottom.
A disc at the bottom. Okay. All right, so we're gonna go to our questions. I'm coming to you again, same question, and we'll start with you. Why should other young people in your generation get involved in working to help the environment?
I think young people should get involved because it could help the environment more, and it can teach them more about what's going on, and it can help the next generation.
Okay.
I think young people should be getting involved in the environment because we, as a young people, we are the future, so we need to take a good care of our environment.
Okay, so I think our younger generation should get involved because in the future, if we don't clean the water, like, you're going to be taking a shower with unclean water, and you're going to be drinking unclean water, or doing the dishes with unclean water.
I think our younger people should care about water pollution because I like cold water, and when I drink cold water, I don't get sick. So I think they should care for their health.
Okay. What has your work with Friends of the Call
taught you and how has it inspired you?
I've learned about new stuff, like what pollutes the water and what type of stuff pollutes the water.
How it inspired you?
Oh, it inspired me? Well, we don't have no dogs or none of that. And I don't put down the fertilizer, but I told my father to put it down correctly.
Okay.
So what I learned from Carl is that our water in our community are, like, getting, like, unclean. And, like, we should worry about it because we don't want to drink unclean water. And what inspired me was that, like, we should help out to make the community, like, a better place for us for the future.
Okay. Your question. Tell our listening audience about what they can do to help limit pollution related to the data that you have learned to collect.
Things you can do is use a car commercial car wash and plant trees, and don't throw trash in the streets, and try to pick up trash, any trash that you see.
First, before you answer, why a commercial car wash?
Because the water, it doesn't go down to the river. It goes to the stations where it is being cleaned first. Okay. So it's better to use that.
All right.
I think...
Oh, the question is, tell the listening audience what they can do to help limit pollution related to the data you have learned to collect.
I think you can help limit the pollution by picking up pet waste, like if you have a pet, and dump your oil and gas correctly instead of putting it on your driveway or anything.
Okay. Now we're going to do something different. This was not part of our agenda. I'm going to have you three move. And we're going to have Ms. Laura and Denise come up here to the table, please. And then I'm going to have you ask him a question. Woo, girl.
I'm ready.
Now you represent the group, so you get to ask the question. Well, I know how many people would have loved to have done that. Go ahead, young lady.
What's your guy's name?
What's my what name?
Your name.
Oh, I'm Laura Caldwell, and I'm the education director for Friends of the Caw and for Friends of Caw Point Park. And Friends of Caw Point Park was the entity that sponsored this intern project this year.
Okay. Go ahead.
I'm Denise Kidder. I'm the educational specialist for Friends of the Caw and Friends of Caw Point Park.
How long have you guys been doing this?
Well, I've been involved with Friends of the Caw since about 1995, so over 20 years. I was their president. I was in the board of directors. I served as the Kansas Riverkeeper for 13 years, and I've been the education director for about 5 years.
I have I've been a elementary, middle school, and high school teacher for about 15 years, and I've been involved with the water quality programs for about 5 years in the Kansas City metropolitan area.
What would you tell adults who may not be motivated to make changes to defend your environment?
Well, we all want to live in a healthy environment. We want it healthy for the critters that live in the environment. So I think one of the best things they can do is not litter. That's one of my biggest things is don't litter.
Denise? I feel like as adults, we should try to pick some kind of a best management practice that we can carry on into our own communities and into our own households, and carry that forward so that people can see us in action trying to make an improvement that will be long-lasting.
Okay, thank you, Stephanie. Mm-hmm. I wanted the group to have a chance to ask you all some questions. Now I'm coming to you two to be able to speak yourself. Laura, you can start it off there. Just say something about the program. Thanks,
ma'am. Well, I just want to say that we are sponsoring a community cleanup at Big 11 Lake, which is we'll meet on the corner of 11th and Washington on Saturday, March 23rd. The cleanup is from 10 to noon. The interns are planning this cleanup, so they'll be there to hand out trash bags and help with that. We also will be starting our spring classes, our Kids About Water classes, after spring break. This is a 5-lesson curriculum that teaches kids about stormwater. We do take them out, and they do water testing at a water site, and then we analyze the data and then talk about the best management practices. Okay. And we can always use volunteers to help us. So you can look up Friends of the Caw on, just Google it, and it'll get you to the website.
And we'll see. We might be able to get that on KKFI's website also to let them know. Denise, I want you to speak to this group, how you felt it was working with this group.
The interns have been amazing. I've really watched them grow since the first session together after school into being able to train adults with our Kansas Master Naturalist 2 weeks ago. So they have learned a great deal about helping our environment, and they're very dedicated, and I'm very, very proud of all of their hard work and efforts, and I know that their teachers and parents and families are probably extremely proud of them this evening. So good job, guys.
Thank you very much.
Yes, they did an awesome, awesome job at the adult training. They talked to adults and showed them their water tests, and we were really pleased with how they performed.
Yeah, I have really enjoyed this group. I think that they performed exceptionally well with each other, with the our instructions, and also with the testing thing. So if that's it, I think I'm going to call that. There's a call coming in. I'm not for sure if that's for us or not. Okay, so I'm going to turn it back over to you, Mr. Bennett.
All right. Thanks so much, Richard. That was great. And thanks to all of you for organizing all that. I especially want to thank Friends of the Caw because they came to my classroom and helped teach my students, and my students did a great job. And I think one thing you were talking about, this particular group, I think we had 100% attendance, which is a rare thing. Is that right? I think everyone showed up pretty much every time. Yeah. So that's you know, you got to be there, kids. If you want to get the job, you got to be there and show what you can do. So
are paid $15 an hour, so that helps the attendance.
Yeah,
also.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. It's
Facts.
A great opportunity. Yeah,
thanks.
Yeah, indeed. So, yeah. Any last minute shout outs? Anybody else need to say anything else? Oh, one more.
I'd like to shout out Master X.
All right, Master.
Arriba Mexico.
I'd like to shout out my dogs at home.
Shout out to Joe Nasty.
Shout out for my family.
Shout out to Carlay, too.
Shout out my cat.
Oh, I tell you, man, we got some shout outs coming. Thank you, gang. We appreciate
day.
You.
The streets connected to the storm drain on this current cast. Volunteers remove more than 18 tons of trash from Great Lakes beaches each year, but
it's not just stuff that's left on the beach. There's the problem.
That's Anna McCartney of Pennsylvania Sea Grant. She says that during a 2-year program, Erie Public School students learn that some marine debris starts out in their communities.
We made watershed maps so that they could trace the stormwater from their street to the nearest storm drain, to the nearest stream, then to the lake.
Then many students join neighborhood trash cleanups. So they learned firsthand that preventing litter in the lake means keeping trash off streets and sidewalks, too. Current Cast, produced with Cornell's Atkinson Center for a Sustainable Future and made possible by the Foundation for Pennsylvania Watershed, online at currentcast.org.
Now the calendar of events for the week of March 4th. Activism 101, Saving the Planet in Solidarity. Ready to take action but not sure what action looks like? Then come to the Thomas Hart Benton Group Sierra Club March meeting at All Souls UU Church, 4501 Walnut, March 5th, 7 p.m. Contact Kevin Grooms at 816-809-6906 or email kagrooms@gmail.com. On March 6th at 5 a.m., KKFI features Rachel Carson on Pacifica Radio Archives from the Vault, which pays tribute to the amazing and inspirational scientist and writer through archival recordings of Carson in her own voice. March 7th at noon on Sprouts, KKFI features an interview with Fred Provenza, Professor Emeritus in the Department of Wildland Resources at Utah State University, a renowned animal behaviorist. On March 8th at 9:30 a.m. on Bioneers, Religion is the Oldest, Most Compelling Moral Framework for Social Action. As Director of World Wildlife Fund's Sacred Earth Program, Buddhist Dikala Chamyaka shows how religion and spiritual consciousness are emerging globally as powerful forces for restoring our relationship with nature and with each other. The 18th Annual Spring Gardening Seminar will be March 9th at Rockhurst University, Kansas City, Missouri. This is an all-day event with workshops including Best Veggies for Midwest Climate, Gardening with Natives, Evergreen Pruning. Go to mggkc.org/spring-seminar to enroll. Also on March 9th, there's a schoolyard garden workshop, 10 a.m. to noon, where teachers and staff can learn how to start an edible garden this spring at a Planning and Planting Your Schoolyard Garden workshop. Kansas City Community Gardens will host this two-hour workshop at their headquarters, 6917 Kensington Avenue, Kansas City, Missouri. Participants will learn how to plan and plant a spring garden, select plants, and teach students with fun garden activities and demonstration lessons. To register for the workshop, go to KCCG Schoolyard Gardens. Wyandotte County Lake Conditioning Hikes begin March the 9th, 7:30 a.m. to 12:45 p.m. The Sierra Club Kansas Group meets at Wyandotte County Park Shelter House 2 at the Shelter House 2 Access Road, Kansas City, Kansas. Contact Matt Verholst at zionhikes@yahoo.com or call 913-484-2212. These items and more can be viewed on the Eco Radio KC Facebook page and at the kkfi.org Eco Radio KC program page.
Climate change could make some clouds disappear. That story and more on H2O Radio's weekly news report. I'm Jamie Sudler.
I'm Franny Halperin, and it's This Week in Water.
While many cities and communities across the country are trying to eliminate single-use plastics like straws and cups, a boom in plastics production is occurring along the Ohio River Valley.
Most people don't realize that natural gas is where a lot of plastic manufacturing starts, and there's a lot of natural gas in Pennsylvania, West Virginia, and Ohio.
Where coal and steel once dominated, petrochemicals appear to be the future despite their effects on the climate and ocean pollution.
Inside Climate News reports that an affiliate of Shell Oil is building a massive $6 billion plant in western Pennsylvania to make plastic pellets, which can be turned into anything from bottles to car parts.
The pellets are made from ethane, a natural gas liquid, which is turned into ethylene through a process called cracking. Before processing it, there are plans to store ethane underground below and around the Ohio River.
Shell is not the only one interested. A Chinese firm is moving forward in West Virginia, and a partnership between a Korean and Thai company is soon expected to announce whether they'll build an ethane cracker plant in Ohio.
The new Shell plant alone will emit more than 2 million tons of carbon dioxide a year, which would effectively wipe out all of the carbon reductions that Pittsburgh, 25 miles away, plans to achieve by 2030.
An ingredient that's been used to kill germs may instead be making them stronger and able to survive antibiotics, according to new research.
Triclosan is a chemical added to many household products like mouthwash, clothing, cosmetics, deodorants, body wash, lip gloss, baby toys, and even credit cards in the hopes that it will kill bacteria.
Research from Washington University in St. Louis has found by testing mice that the chemical makes bacteria able to tolerate antibiotics, including those commonly used to treat urinary tract infections.
UTIs are common, as is triclosan. About 75% of adults in the U.S. have detectable levels of the chemical in their urine.
Even before this study, there was some movement to remove triclosan from products. In January, Colgate-Palmolive started selling its popular Total brand of toothpaste without it. Procter & Gamble, the maker of Crest toothpaste, has phased out the use of the chemical in its products. In 2017, the FDA banned the use of triclosan in soaps and hand sanitizers marketed as antimicrobial.
Stratocumulus clouds can appear as lumpy and gray, sitting low in the sky and sometimes producing light rain and drizzle. While they aren't as dramatic as thunderheads that climb tens of thousands of feet into the sky, stratocumulus formations are important for the Earth's atmosphere.
A study published in the journal Nature Geoscience is predicting that these clouds could vanish altogether and not come back if carbon dioxide levels continue to rise at the current pace. Should they disappear, it would heat up the atmosphere even more because they reflect lots of sunlight back into space.
Predicting cloud behavior is difficult, so the researchers used a model to increase the amount of CO2 to three times what it is today, at which point the stratocumulus clouds were no longer large reflective sheets.
Clouds have been uncertainties in climate modeling. Matthew Huber of Purdue University told the Washington Post that models may be underestimating their role in future changes.
As rivers run, they naturally take up oxygen from the air and mix it below the surface, which is important for fish and aquatic life. That mixing was threatened recently by a project to deepen and expand the port of Savannah, Georgia.
After being sued by environmental groups, the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers has now built large pumps to force air into the bottom of the Savannah River so that fish can breathe.
The four towering metal cones mix water and air just like a small bubbler in a fish tank. The Associated Press reports that the intent is to increase dissolved oxygen in the river for blue crabs, striped bass, and endangered short-nosed sturgeon.
Chris DeSher of the Southern Environmental Law Center said that the machines are similar to placing the river on a respirator and is concerned about the concept of using a mechanical system to reoxygenate it.
The Corps of Engineers must test and prove that the oxygen injection system works before the harbor expansion can proceed.
And finally, you've probably heard the fable about the frog in hot water. As the story goes, if a frog sits in a pot of water that slowly warms, it won't leap out because the temperature change is too slow for it to notice until it's too late and it's boiled to death. While the story has been scientifically debunked, it might serve as a perfect parable for humans and climate change.
A new study shows that as global warming causes more severe and violent weather events, after a couple of years have passed, we're not seeing it as unusual.
Looking at Twitter, researchers led by a team from the University of California, Davis, found that people tweeted when temperatures were abnormal for a particular place and time of year, such as a warm March or an unexpectedly freezing winter.
But they found that there were significantly fewer tweets about the weather if those same conditions repeated within a couple of years. People's perceptions of what's normal appear